Hello and welcome to the Blindside edition of the Whiteboard Rugby podcast. And as always, I'm joined by Sam Roberts. Sam, how are you?
Tip top. Absolutely tip top. Not going to say anything other. It's half term. You know, things are great, aren't they? The kids are around annoying me a lot more than they usually are. Absolutely tip top.
Well, we have a teacher connection as well because our guest is Gavin Thomas, who is a grassroots superstar. former teacher as well. We've just been discussing Gav reckons he's played over 500 games, 300 alone for his current team, St. Leonard's down in Sussex. Gav, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me both. It's exciting to get a talk about grassroots rugby.
Yeah, it's really good to have you. Really good to have you with us, Gavin. Very, very much. I've heard a great deal about you, and I think you'd join me in agreeing that you won't be alone. That there will be a number of people like you around the United Kingdom who have embraced the community game in such a way. Would you agree? You must meet people who are of your ilk around the game.
Oh, absolutely. I've been in the community game in Sussex for nearly 20 years, and there's guys I know who've been at the same clubs for the entire 20 years I've been here in Sussex, and longer. You know, I work in our competitions committee, and there's some people who've been involved in Sussex rugby for nearly 50 years.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. You've got a very strong Sussex accent, I have to say.
Absolutely, yes.
Tell us, Gav, where was your first senior grassroots game? And maybe just a potted history of the different clubs and different locations you've been in.
I played for my uncle's team in Wales when I was about 18, just one game. And I think it was Markham, but yeah, I literally can't remember which club it was. But I did my youth rugby at RTB Ebervale, but I had a very patchy period there, and then played a bit of rugby in Markham, and then I went to university and played, kind of fifth or sixth, 15 rugby at my university. And then I kind of had a really peripatetic lifestyle a bit in South London, where I floated about various teams playing, you know, kind of 7-15th rugby. I think I played one game for Roslyn Park, 7th. One game for Barnes, 5th or 6-15. and I kind of floated a bit out the rugby, and I played cricket and I played football. And kind of rugby be always been part of my life because my dad played, but my dad played first class rugby in Wales. And then I kind of floated out of it a bit. And then I reached 30 and I realized actually I was kind of missing what rugby offers. And I'd split up from a difficult relationship. And I thought, oh, what's the thing that's going to get me to reconnect a bit with, like, oh, go back and play rugby? So I went and played fourth team rugby for Portsmouth for a number of years, and before then moving across to Sussex when I met my now wife, and went for Kim St. Leonard's had only just started, and I thought, it can't hurt to go and play game rugby for this team who's never played, first game ever. Or can you play it outside half? No, I haven't played it outside half since I was 12. But well, what could possibly go wrong? Turns out quite a lot could go wrong. But, my ability to not kick was quite apparent. Because I played school, and when I was 14, 15, I could kick. It turned out being 31 was slightly different to being 15.
That is a massive part. So many rugby players will be really sort of connecting with that is an absolutely brilliant story. I digress a little bit. There's a chap called Phil Bolton who used to play for Bedford, and he went on to play for Coventry, started out in the Leicester Tigers Academy. He's absolutely brilliant. And there's actually a bit of footage attached to this, Sam Lana, and we're going to try and dig it out. But Gavin, you'll love this story. Phil Bolton was a prop forward, as hard as they come. Really, really tough man. Really, really. But played as part of a Bedford Blues side that loved to run the ball. And there's a bit of footage from a TV game that he played in where he ends up with the ball in space. And the logical thing crying out to everyone watching it was to boot it downfield and chase it. And he does just that. But as he does so, he drops the ball and it just lands in front of him. Now, when we spoke to him afterwards, because it was a very incongruous thing that he was running with the ball, he'd shaped to kick it, he dropped it, and nothing happened below the waist, right? Okay. And the ball just dropped. It was knock on, scrum down. And everyone's sort of like the derisory claims around the ground, you can say. Now, when I spoke to him afterwards, I said, "What? Can you explain what happened?" And he said a brilliant line, which Gavin, I think you'll connect to. He said, "I went to kick it. And then as I let go of the ball, I thought to myself, am I right footed or left footed?" So he decided not to kick it with either foot. So that links quite nicely to where you're coming from. This we forget sometimes some of the most essential parts of our game in the moment when the pressure is on, Gavin. So I agree with you. Fantastic.
No, and that actually reminds me of something that happened in my last game a couple of weeks ago. So I've spent the last decade essentially playing in the tight five. Predominantly at second row, but I've played at hooker, I've played at loose head. And we travelled with 14 a couple of weeks ago to play a student team. And our scrum half went off injured. And our usual next person scrum half was playing 10. So I said, I'll go to scrum half, that's not a problem. I've arrived wheezing at the breakdown. And I've looked across to see where Luke our 10 is. I thought, I can't pass the ball that far. So I've picked the ball up and sniped and just wandered around the side of the ruck in the hope that their six wouldn't notice what I was doing. Sadly, got absolutely folded up. But and I think sometimes as rugby players you almost forget the limitations of your body.
Oh, you do. Got 100%.
Talk about the limitations of your body, Gav. We played in a charity game up in Southport. I only played the one game. You played two in 48 hours a couple of years ago, I think that was. And I remember that the first breakdown, you were guarding the ruck, and we were playing together. And when we both got subbed off, you came over to me and said that you'd been hit so hard, you thought your nipple had fallen off. Which I think made me laugh for the next hour of that game, and still 2 years later does. But it was a genuine fear.
I've now got a picture of a body moving out of shot and just two nipples left in shot being hit that hard. That's all that's left of you are two nipples held in the air just before they fall to the floor. Just bonk. Yeah.
That's a better mental image than what I actually had at the time, because I'd been kind of picked up and shifted sideways out of the rack, and he'd caught me under the shoulder and his hand had moved across. And I was convinced there was a loose piece of skin that was in my shirt that was actually my nipple.
Oh, God. I don't think we brought him on for this, Sam. We were going to go really
in depth. Yeah, we were going to talk about the specifics of Glasley Slumpy. Let's talk about the specifics of Glasley Slumpy, Gav. You talked there about Barnes and Roslyn Park, sevens and seventh team, sixth team, and so on. When I talked to my dad about this, he members playing in teams that had four and five squads that they'd get out on a Saturday. The most I've played for about 15 years ago, a team that had three teams out. Now, teams that had three will get two. Teams that had two will kind of struggle to get one. Is that the kind of the general pattern that you've seen?
Yeah, so I've been involved in competitions, organisation in Sussex for about 7 or 8 years now. And if I think just about the teams I'm dealing with competition-wise, it's shrinking. And I played against Hove fifth team 17, 18 years ago, and now they have two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Brighton had five teams, and now they've got two teams. And where the fall-off appears to be is in the kind of rugby I play, kind of coarse rugby, to use the name of that old book, rather than, you know, there are younger guys who go into the gym who are doing all the things you need to do. And they are good rugby players. They are rugby players who maybe not earning lots of money out of it, but certainly get aren't out of pocket as a result of playing rugby. And I think, and that's where grassroots rugby is heading now. You know, kind of when we talk grassroots rugby now, we are talking about sides running one or two teams at regional level or the higher end of county level. And the likes of me are becoming less and less. And I don't think it's because we're getting older, you know, it's clearly the case. But I don't think younger players are coming into that level of social rugby as much, because social, the idea of rugby as a social thing isn't as pronounced as it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a huge shame in a sense that, you know, the flip side of that, I 100% agree with you in a sense of where rugby is heading and what rugby, you know, what rugby has to face up to in a sense of where it's losing connection with people. But I can only really speak from a personal connection from on behalf of my son, Will, who has found a social club to play for, which has really connected him back with the game from any other reason than a social reason. And it seems because I don't think that has changed. I know a lot has changed in our world, and there's a lot of pressures, and there's a lot of financial issues, and there's a lot of distractions, there's a lot of other things that we can do with our lives. I get that. But also, there is also no replacement sometimes for what rugby gives you socially. And he's now playing when he can, when work allows him to play on a Saturday afternoon. And he goes out on a Saturday night, and it's just great fun. Yeah. And the rugby, you know, as we all know, in fits and starts, it's good for a few moments. It's pretty patchy for another few moments. But that's not the point. That's not why he's signing up. Yes, we all want to play well and want to play as well as we possibly can. But the social element, it's still there, isn't it, Gavin? The social element of rugby still is there.
Yeah, and I think where it is, Sam, there's almost a huge dividing line now where grassroots is. So there are grassroots clubs, and I'll use that kind of broadly, like Isha, they're a good example, London Welsh, Brighton, Hove. These are big clubs who are operating at the higher levels of amateur rugby, for want of a better phrase, and I'll run at a semi-professional level. They have people who are very active like in the club, but also some people are in payroll, so particularly in bigger clubs like Isha. But then the other end of it, and I don't know what your son's club is like, but the other end of it, there are clubs like my own that exist in the most purest grassroots sense. We don't have a clubhouse. We're an adult club. We have no training facilities, no playing facilities. We've played out to five or six, seven different grounds in the 20 years we've existed. And it's purely a social thing. It's there to encourage people to come and do something on the Saturday afternoon, have a couple of beers afterwards. And the makeup of our club is a mixture of guys who have been around a long time, like myself, a couple of younger guys who've come through the junior section of bigger clubs but have come to us because of the way we operate. And then I would say 70% of our playing base are people who've never played rugby before.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. We're a much lower, a lower pressure environment in which to come into rugby. So there are still clubs like that. I just think now the idea that's what people do on the weekend has disappeared a little bit. You know, my dad played in the 60s and 70s in Wales and played at a decent standard. But then in every village there was a club. And that was a focal for the social life of that particular village. And that's disappearing. And my experience of the English game is very much the rugby clubs, depending on where you are, somewhere like Bedford or Gloucester, rugby has a far bigger profile. Yeah. But where I live in Hastings, rugby is very seen much as this minority, is very much a minority sport.
Yeah.
And it's drawing those people in is difficult then.
Yeah.
We never played against each other, but we both played in Sussex for a few years when I was at Ditchling. And we had consistent battles to get players out. And it felt like there was kind of, let's say, maybe 1,000 people who played rugby in Sussex, and they were just, and it never went up, and it seemingly never went down. And I suspect that might be changing now, but it just moved you down between clubs. So at one point, Ditchling was struggling, and Plumpton, which is, you know, 2-3 miles away as the crow flies, probably was doing well. And then a couple of seasons later, Plumpton were doing poorly and Ditchling had good numbers. And as you say, Hove used to be the team that everyone went to, but now that seems to be drifting. It feels in some ways like there's a bit of a change in terms of what people are looking for. As you mentioned at the start, there's in some ways rugby is both taken too seriously and not seriously enough, in that it's taken too seriously in that it's hard to just get a game out if you've got 12 on 12. There's push by the other few to get those games on, but generally people aren't that keen and they still treat it perhaps too seriously. Whereas on the other hand, clubs could merge probably, and there seems a real reluctance to do that. And it does seem like something will perhaps need to give in that regard.
Well, I think there's two separate elements there. I think part of it about the taking things seriously, I totally agree with you. You know, it's, we travelled with 14, but that included 3 guys in their 50s, you know, to play rugby because we wanted to play rugby. We knew where we was ending. We were playing a bunch of students. It wasn't going to end well, but it's important to do it. And I don't want to sound like a really old man, but I think league rugby is this really difficult situation because everybody wants to play in leagues because that's how sport is organised. But because I'm old enough to remember leagues not existing, and I'm not the only person left in Sussex rugby who can remember that. For me, rugby is just about playing rugby. But for the vast majority of people who understand rugby now, it's competitive. You play in leagues, you play in caps, and that's the nature of it. But it wasn't that long ago. You know, it's generational. I am of a generation that played friendly rugby. My dad played friendly rugby, a very competitive level. But it was friendlies.
I've got a really interesting point on this, a conversation I was having. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Bedford have a player called Dean Adamson, who's just scored more tries than anyone else in the championship this year. He's also in pursuit of Derek Wyatt's club record for the amount of tries being scored. And Derek Wyatt, listen to this, Derek Wyatt is in touch with the club saying whether or not friendlies should be included in Dean Adamson's total. Right. And the club quite rightly has pointed out to him. So it should be. And he said, well, it should only be, you know, proper league competitive matches. And of course, Derek Wyatt was playing in the 70s. And to which the response, of course, is, well, we didn't have any leagues. Mm. And he says, every game I played in was competitive. Because and isn't that's exactly what you're talking about. You remove the league structure, then every game becomes important rather than just the games in the league. And that's kind of it. We've kind of fallen foul of our own parameters, our own structure that we want to place on something has kind of made it seem more important than potentially it should be. Really, the most important thing is taking the field and getting out there and playing a game of rugby. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter about the end outcome. It just matters about getting out there and being as competitive as you can possibly be with the people you've got today. Yes?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And if you take someone like Gareth Edwards, if you say league rugby is important, Gareth Edwards probably only played 45 competitive games in his entire career. Because, you know, he played probably more than that, 50 caps or whatever he had for Wales. Yeah. And then maybe 10, 15 cap games.
Yeah, I've always said that about the 1973 Barbarians versus All Blacks game. I was like, well, it's just, they're not really playing for anything. So it didn't really matter.
And I think we've become so just steadfast in the idea that leagues is how you structure competitive sport in any sport.
That
the idea that you can do something that isn't league rugby and it still has value and it still has worth. You know, I'm talking myself, I say a job, but I'm a volunteer. I organise leagues in Sussex, but there is not just, you know, in my locality, there is a discussion. Does everyone have to play in the league? Is that the only way to assign value to sports?
And in that league, Gavin, you'll also have teams that you have really good matches against. Mm. And you'd like to say, I'd like to play you five times this season because I know we have a really, really good game against you. I don't want to play against a side that beats us 70-0. Oh. I want to play against you guys five, six times this season because we'd have a great game.
And that's how it used to be. And you know, kind of, I think of my dad's club, Tredegar. They would play Ebervale three or four times a season. They would play Newport a number of times a season. They play Pontypool a number of times a season. And people weren't bored with those games happening. I'm sure the same thing happened with Bedford as well. I'm sure Bedford played Northampton and Coventry and, you know, kind of those sides lots. And
just
I think,
to give us... Sorry, go
no, sorry, go Sam. No, just saying, you know, clearly at the highest level, elite sport is elite sport and it has to be organised as such. But, you know, how far is that bandwidth of elite sport would be my question.
Very good point.
That seems one of the interesting things about it, because I remember thinking about this, because I've been involved in committees and coaching at grassroots levels for about eight or 9 years. And at first, it you know, feels important to be in a league because you feel like that's the way to measure success. But then you realise actually grassroots rugby is not a pathway to elite rugby. You know, none of us are playing with anyone who is going to get spotted by, you know, Sale Sharks in my case and get picked up.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't need to be at that level. And just to give you an idea about, you know, if you're out there and you don't play elite rugby or you play back in the past, you haven't continued. So our second team playing more or less the bottom of the merit table leagues. So these are where you would play either you know, third or fourth teams of the big clubs, or maybe the first teams of teams who only have one club, and they are in a league with 14 other people. It's a 15 team league, and the league structure has decided to play both home and away, so that's 28 league games in a season, and they have 1 week off, so they started a week before us in the first team, so they played the first week of September, and all the way through to Christmas they have 1 weekend off, which is now being filled with a cup game. And there's no one's getting their teams out. No one's getting the teams out. And it just seems absolutely crazy to have that as a system when you could say, instead of playing, you know, 15 games before Christmas, let's play seven and actually get people out.
Yeah, in Sussex, what we've done, and you're blowing my own trumpet here, and the team I work with, we've created leagues that are occasional leagues. So the lowest league that I play in, we play one game a month.
Yeah.
And it's still a league, but we play one game a month. And if we want to create friendlies, we can do. But for our players and for players in other clubs as well, because I've spoken to them, there's less pressure on them. Because they know they can play rugby once a month. And then they can do other things the other 3 weeks. And we are going to side out. Admittedly, not always 15 guys, but we can side out every game. Mm. And it is... That's a compromise route that I think rugby should consider. Because it sounds balmy to me, Sam, that a second team of a club, which is made up of social players, is playing nearly 30 games a season, because we used to do it as well. But that was different. We had a lot bigger squad then and we could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same as the Pro G Deux. The Pro G Deux, famously the most kind of... you know, the meat grinder of the league, and they're getting paid very well for it. But when you're playing second second team, and you're, if you're there every week and other people aren't, sometimes you'll be playing with 15, sometimes you'll be playing with 9. And we had a game where we had 9 against 15 and they had 4 subs and it was a 92-5 or something. And it's, how enjoyable is that for anyone, for the Saxes A? And how valuable is that as any kind of experience, really, at grassroots rugby?
Yeah. No, nobody's enjoying that. And if they say they are, I'm not entirely convinced they're right. Because
no.
I've been on the end of a 100-point defeat, and I've been in a 100-point win, and neither of them felt great.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to us about what did feel great. I asked this question with some trepidation because I'm sure you found yourself in some wonderful rugby scenarios, Gavin, over the years. Talk to us about some of your one or two of your finer memories. And I should think it probably has nothing to do with scoreboards or outcomes, but it has to do potentially with characters and people you've met. Are there any that float to the top that you could perhaps regale us with in the community game that sum up the fun that rugby in the community game brings us?
Well, there's one story that leaps strictly to quickly to mind. We were playing a tour game at Portsmouth, my former club, playing against the fourth team. And the night before, we had certainly we'd made ourselves known in the pubs of Portsmouth and Southsea. And some of our players were struggling more than others. And we had a winger, and he'd come to the game quite raw. He'd never really played rugby, but he was incredibly quick. But he couldn't really catch the ball. And he was, we shouldn't have put him on the field. He was cruel. And he'd been in a bit of a bump, and then he just wandered across to the touchline. And he was sick. And I'm watching this and going, oh, this is terrible. We're quite close to the sea. A seagull arrives from nowhere and the seagull comes down to eat the sick. Unfortunately, he thought the opposition fullback had kicked the ball because all he's seen, he's a bit blurry-eyed. He's seen this white shape. So he's leapt up quite athletically considering how drunk he'd been to catch what he thought was the ball was actually a seagull. Which did not take kindly to this particular player trying to grab hold of him, and the game kind of stops at this point because everybody's thinking, "Well, what's going to happen next?" He realises it's not a ball; he's released it, and then the ball does actually come in to him down the wing, and he managed to get it. But yeah, that was one of the things that instantly sticks in my mind. Just in terms of, kind of that's grassroots rugby for me. That's community rugby for me.
I was hearing a story in at Ditchling, a kind of a darkly humorous story where a tank who you will know, Gav, over the years, yes. He was a prop who played for us at Ditchling, very lovely guy. And he was captain for a little while, but he was captain in the age of, before social media, before WhatsApp. And his Saturday mornings would consist of basically phoning someone up just to be the 15th man or to be the 16th man on the bench. And he was working his way through his little black book in a coffee shop somewhere in Sussex. And he phoned someone up only to be told that they died 4 years earlier. so unfortunately, wouldn't be available to be on the bench.
So does that mean he won't be making it?
Try again next week.
The other story I'll briefly try to recount that popped into my mind. When I was at Portsmouth, we had an away game, I think it was Gosport and Fareham, and we didn't have enough players, and for some reason we couldn't meet at the clubhouse. We all sat in the pub in Southsea, and there's about 11 of us thinking, oh, do we bother? And said, no, we'll go anyway. So we get there, we had 12 players, we got there, and we had no forwards whatsoever. And they said, oh, well, there's another lad you can borrow. I have no idea who he is. He's some northern lad with the Navy, and he's just looking for a game of rugby. This lad comes across. Turned out he played quite a high level of rugby league. They had what can only be described as the largest pack I've ever seen, but we had to go uncontested because we had no forwards. And we beat them, I think it was 51-38. Because every collision, we just flung the ball out as wide as we could to two quick lads. And they go, and that was 20 plus years ago, but we still talk about, they still get brought up on social, or remember that game of Gosport. And yeah, and that's what, that doesn't happen in a professional game, because, you know, it wouldn't. But, and that's what's a great thing about grassroots rugby, because there's 30 guys there who've got stories to keep recounting and recounting. They'll get slightly more lurid and get slightly more exciting. But at the heart of it, this is a shared experience that we've all had. And it's just, you know, that's what it's about for me.
Yeah, I remember playing in a game that was so muddy. The ball was kicked through and ended up in the in-goal area. And one of their players went to dab it down and the referee gave a try. Because he couldn't work out whether or not the player who dabbed it down, and there was this really strange interaction between their player saying, "No, I'm not playing for them. I'm playing for us." And he had to clean his shirt to show the badge that he was wearing, so that they could have a 20. This is one of the time of the 22 dropout. But that, again, just lovely moments like that, that you're just looking at it going, "This is amazing." Referee was so defiant. He spent a good 10-15 seconds just walking back, saying, disagreeing with this bloke, going, "No, try scored." He was arguing with him. It was absolutely brilliant.
Gav, just to finish on Glastic Rugby, we all know the kind of the benefits of it, and it is a wonderful, when it works, and when you've got a team out there, regardless of what the score is, there are those memories that have stuck in my mind. I played my first senior game in 2010, I think it was, and so you know. You're probably considering one of your early retirements by that point, but that was the number of games that have stuck in my mind since then. But I do worry about the future of grassroots rugby, and I see ways out, but I don't necessarily see that there's a belief or that there's the ability to get out of the hole that we're in. Are you more confident than me that we can see a way out and we can see a growth in grassroots rugby again?
There are young men and young women playing grassroots rugby and coming to grassroots rugby brand new. And no matter how it's organised, I'm a romantic. I'm romantic about rugby as a sport. It's a sport that's, you know, created some of my strongest friendships, because of the nature of the game. And I think people will come into it and they'll experience it and they'll have the love that I did, you know, that I fostered 40-odd years ago, wherever. And they'll create friends. And you talked about that charity game. That was in memory of a friend of mine who I played with, who died tragically young. And that's what rugby does, I think. It creates bonds make you do stupid things like playing two games of rugby in 24 hours 300 miles apart. Mm. And that's why you'll survive, because at heart, you know, it's the best game. I really do believe that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I kind of think that it almost needs to dissolve in its current state to reemerge and to refix it. I was just saying, I don't, you could ever get rid of it because of where it stands, but certain things need to be reshaped. And as you say, I think we've talked about them on this show, Sam. I think Gav's come up with an absolute, you know, a really good blueprint for the way that the community game needs to be set up. It needs to be sensibly, you know, put throughout the season. It needs to be structured so that, you know, leagues aren't the important thing, that the meaningful fixtures, however they come, are the ones that come through. A brilliant chat, absolutely fantastic chat. Some bits will stay with me for a while, actually, but some really, really good bits. Gavin, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And good luck. Dare I ask, I mean, do you ever stop, you know, think about stopping playing? I mean, is there a point, or are you just going to, until someone wheels you off for the final time, is that you committed to the game forever?
I retired this summer, but I've played two full games after the three games our club has played this season. But
I did. You're like Shane Williams, Gav, just keep coming back for one more game.
And I think realistically, Sam, I'll stop playing when I can't get there, but I don't think I'm ever going to retire. I'm never going to say, right, this is the last game. I'll know when the last game is, and that will be the point I give up.
Yeah. Oh, well, good luck to you. And on behalf of all of our listeners, very, very good luck to you. Thank you very much. A wonderful episode, Sam Lana.
Absolutely. Well, we need more people like Gav in the Glassroots game. But if you've got ideas for how to solve Glassroots rugby, then let us know. But I think we couldn't have done better than getting Gav's thoughts on that.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed. Another brilliant episode of the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.